Good ball played in for Tony Morley. Oh, he must be! And it is! Peter Wills!
Hello and good afternoon and welcome, kind people, to Gather Round Again, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you in association with underagaslitlamp.com. I am flying solo this week as to talk about Aston Villa's, I believe, 15th consecutive home win in all competitions, a 2-1 victory last night versus AZ Alkmaar, which turned out to be the perfect tonic and the magic elixir to that very disappointing 2-0 reverse to Nottingham Forest just this past Sunday. I'm not going to discuss that game in any kind of detail here, but if you do wish to listen to an in-depth discussion, please check out the main show, the Gather Around the Lamp podcast, which this week is available, as always, on all of your beautiful podcast platforms, and is presented by our good friend Andy and co-starring Daniel Bettridge. And they will break down that 2-0 defeat away at the City Ground in Nottingham for you. Today, we're going to be talking about happier things and happier times. We are going to be talking about the majestic 2-1 victory against AZ Alkmaar. So first of all, let's start with the glaringly obvious. It seems as though in the starting 11, there is the emergence of a European 11, which features some differences from our Premier League 11. So we always are seeing Diego Carlos for a start at centre half. We're also seeing Clément Longley, or Daddy Longlegs, as buddy and brother Andy labelled him so successfully earlier this season. We're also seeing starts for Leon Bailey, who isn't starting in the league. And we're also seeing starts for Youri Tielemans. Now, we did, earlier on this season, see John Duran starting. But that seems to have gone by the wayside with his recent toe injury, which may be a toe injury or maybe other things. Who knows? Or maybe he did have a genuine toe injury, but certainly with the Instagram thing, all may not be well in paradise there, but there's probably no need to speculate. So the starting 11 for the AZ Alkmaar tie was Dibu Martinez in goal after those couple of errors at the weekend, but we forgive you because obviously you're the greatest goalkeeper in the world, and congratulations to Dibu Martinez again for being the greatest goalkeeper in the world and winning that Yashin Trophy. At right back, we had the erstwhile Ezri Konsa, Diego Carlos, and Clément Longley at centre half. Luca Dean again at left back with Alex Moreno back on the bench, but Luca Dean maintained his place there. His legs must be getting tired. He has not had any kind of rest this season, Luca Dean. So it was good to see Alex Moreno back on the bench. Youri Tielemans in a double pivot in midfield with Boubacar Kamara. Boubacar and Youri both being called up to their respective international teams. Leon Bailey and on the wing, Moussa Diaby and Ollie Watkins up front, and John McGinn floating around to make up that box midfield. And on the bench, as I mentioned, we saw again the beautiful man that is our left-back extraordinaire, Alex Moreno, who was an unused substitute, Matty Cash, Douglas Luiz, Bertrand Traore, Pau Torres, Nico Zaniolo, Callum Chambers, who I don't know who we'll ever see again, Jon Duran, Robin Olsen, my favourite goalkeeper, Leander Dendonca, and Philip Marshall adding the second keeper to that event. So yeah, it was a blistering start by Aston Villa, absolutely flying into the action, bombarding those AZ Alkmaar teams just as they had away from home, and we basically scored very, very early on from a corner routine, a wonderful Leon Bailey on corner routines this game as no Douglas Luiz in the starting 11. And I have to say, Leon Bailey put in some sublime left-footed deliveries. He had a wonderful corner, which was headed goal-bound by Ollie Watkins. It was then cleared off the line by a AZ Alkmaar defender, which I think is their number nine, who also grabbed the goal for them. Whose name escapes me right now, but I'm sure I will. Pavlidis? Yeah, something like that. He cleared it off the line. The ball's returned to Leon Bailey. Leon Bailey brings it under his spell, and he just floats in, whips in, actually. It wasn't floated, it was whipped. Whips in a majestic cross onto the bonce of Clément Longley, who nods it in, 1-0 Aston Villa. But no. Not so fast, my friend. VAR had other ideas, and the goal was ruled out for offside. Now, it seems as though, based upon interviews with both Ollie Watkins and Yuri Tielemans after the game, that this was, in fact, a refereeing error, and that the Aston Villa players and staff were apologised to, and this was a mistake. This goal should have counted. Clearly, even though Leon Bailey was offside from the Ollie Watkins header, when the AZ Alkmaar player, the striker number nine, makes that clearance off the line, that resets it and it becomes a new phase of play. So, of course, Leon Bailey cannot be offside from a defensive header. They clear their lines. Bailey gets on the ball. He puts in a lovely cross for the aforementioned Clément Longley, and he was unfortunately and cruelly denied his first Aston Villa goal there by a refereeing snafu, the likes of which we are seeing much of this season, and has been a bone of contention, shall we say, for managers such as Klopp and Arteta and Erik ten Hag, whereas some of the more thoughtful managers, the likes of our own Unai Emery and, of course, Ange Postecoglou, the warriors of light in the darkness of the Premier League, have been less apt to hammer the VAR officials and have given them a little bit more space and breathing room. So after that kind of disallowed goal, the rest of the first half, in my view, was kind of meh. Villa huffed and puffed. AZ were obviously looking to be that high line and got caught off a couple of times. AZ Alkmaar did actually have the ball in the net towards the end of the first half, but that goal was correctly chalked off this time for an offside. So the interesting thing is, we just went to AZ Alkmaar 2 weeks ago and gave them an absolute pasting, an absolute beating. And the interesting thing is that they actually played, I think, relatively well in that game. It's just that we really killed them on the counter-attack with a number of wonderful breakaway moves. And they seem to be a little bit wary of that this time and sitting a little bit deeper and trying to exploit our high line and capture us on the counter-attack. So the ebb and flow of the game just changed. And obviously, as I say, goals change games. And the fact that we didn't get that goal from Clément Longley gave AZ Alkmaar some to hope for and cling on to, and they did so very, very well. And they got to the halftime whistle at 0-0. And there were some anticipated changes at halftime. Emery has done that, particularly in the Europa Conference League. He's made some changes at halftime. He's done some movement around. He's given players 45 minutes here or there. He's been resting players and rotating them to make sure everyone was fresh and clean, like Outcast for the... That's a silly reference there. Anyway, we're fresh and ready for obviously our league campaign. So the second half started much like the first, and then there was a breakaway. Clément Longley gets done in behind by Vangelis Pavlidis, the number nine for AZ Alkmaar, who's been in hot form this season in the Eredivisie. And he gets in behind. He's one-on-one with the goalkeeper, and he coolly slots a little dinked finish over the outstretched Emi Martinez. Now, the VAR review that I saw, on my US TV feed. Shout out to Paramount Plus and their detailed coverage of all the UEFA competitions over here, which is actually very good coverage, dare I say. It looked to me like Mr. Pavlidis may have been offside. Looked to me like it was very, very close, and we didn't see that normal, at least again on my feed, we didn't see that close-up replay to see whether it was or whether it wasn't. But it matters not. The goal was allowed to stand. Villa's high line was undone, and they seemed to be targeting Clement Longley. And that's understandable. No heat on Longley from my point of view. Obviously, he is going to find it very difficult getting into a rhythm, only playing a game every 2 weeks. He hasn't been seen in the Premier League for obvious reasons, i.e. the former Pau Torres and the rest of the team, for that matter. So, also not the quickest player in the world, or most dynamic player, is Clement Longley. So he did get caught in behind. The goal was given, and it was 1-0 to AZ Alkmaar. And all of a sudden, Villa are 1-0 down in the second half, and we've got a mountain to climb. And you did fear or question or think about that earlier, Clement Longley goal, and think to yourself, well, let's hope that refereeing error did not cost us dearly. Fortunately, we had, within 10 minutes, the beautiful man, Leon Bailey, our gingerbread friend from Jamaica, whipping in yet another glorious corner. And this time, Diego Carlos gets his bounce on it and nods it in. He didn't even seem to need to jump very high, Diego Carlos. It seems to be right on his head. Wonderful delivery. Another assist and goal contribution for Leon Bailey, whose numbers this season have been quite incredible, dare I say. Definitely doing much, much better work this season than at any other point, I think, in his Villa career, Leon Bailey. Daniel Bettridge will argue that this is because he is, in fact, being utilized in his best position, generally speaking, which is as a substitute. But I would suggest that that Leon Bailey is definitely enjoying some more confidence, and a confident Leon Bailey is a more effective Leon Bailey than the one we've seen. So it's 1-1 Aston Villa, and it's all to play for. And again, it was much of the same. Villa were huffing and puffing. We weren't really working the goalkeeper. Ollie Watkins was particularly quiet, I thought, by his standards. I feel like he's being bullied a little bit, Watkins. And I don't feel like he's getting any protection from the referees. I feel like the Forest defenders at the weekend were bullying him, pulling him, kicking him, and he wasn't really being protected. And the big centre half as well for AZ Alkmaar, Martin Zindi, was also bruising him, and the ref didn't seem to be giving a lot Ollie Watkins way. There didn't seem to be a great deal of protection for Ollie Watkins in this game or the previous game against Nottingham Forest, as I mentioned. Now, Villa managed to carve out a beautiful chance for Boubacar Kamara. And Boubacar Kamara mysteriously, unbelievably, incredibly manages to sky this situation well over the bar. And you can't quite believe it. Villa had picked up, owing, I think, to some substitutions. We saw Zaniola come in to replace Moussa Diaby, who was not good against AZ, it's fair to say. Matty Cash comes in for Ezri Konsa. Ezri Konsa gets a bit of a rest. And Yuri Tielemans is brought out for really our star midfielder, Douglas Luiz. And it was Douglas Luiz who, after the breakdown of that corner, which never should have been given, by the way, it was a clear miss by Boubacar Kamara, a terrible miss. If you are old enough to remember Danny Baker's Old Goals and Gaffes yearly VHS release, you can Google VHS, kids, if you're unsure what that is. Which would be the advertisements would actually be popping up for that this time of year, I would guess, as a stocking filler. But I guess in the age of YouTube, as we are streaming the same very same platform we are streaming on right now, that kind of omnibus of footballing howlers is no longer commercially viable. Anyway, before I go down the rabbit hole, the point is Boubacar Kamara missed. That AZ defender did not touch the ball. And from the resulting corner, the ball eventually ends up with Douglas Luiz, who puts in what I can only describe as a Dennis Bergkamp-esque swinging, curling through ball that Ollie Watkins can simply pick his spot. He's also made a very good run there, Ollie Watkins, and he's nodded it home. And that now puts Ollie Watkins into double figures. And it's only November. This is your quick reminder for those of you who had forgotten, or those of you who have chosen to forgotten or buried the terrible Gerrard tenure. Ollie Watkins had, I believe, two goals by the time the World Cup came around last year. So when we went into January, Ollie Watkins had two goals. I think he then finished on 14 or 15. This year, we are nowhere near January. We are still in the early throes of November with a giant schedule still to come. And Ollie Watkins already has 10 goals. This, touch wood, my wooden desk here, this should be a comfortable 20-goal season for Ollie Watkins. And it could even be a 20-goal league season for Ollie Watkins. He sits on 5 league goals currently. And we know there are more goals for Ollie Watkins. And just congratulations to him. Another call-up to the England side, which is great news for his quest to be included in the Euros at the end of the season. Certainly, he did his chances no harm with a good performance against Australia last time out and the winning goal. Let's see what Ollie Watkins can do. Callum Wilson has also been returned to the squad, and Callum Wilson's having a fantastic season. I think he's got 7 or 8 league goals, so he's actually outscored Ollie Watkins in the Premier League anyway. So let's see. It's going to be a shootout between those guys, and let's see who gets to understudy Harry Kane at the end of the season. So 2-1 Aston Villa, a great goal, a great ball by Ollie Watkins, and then the game was kind of much of the same until the end. I won't say the game petered out, but there were a couple more opportunities for AZ. Again, they were kind of targeting us in behind, particularly targeting Clement Longley. And then disappointingly, distressingly, again, I don't know how many times we've seen it. I don't know how many times we have to see it. And I know we don't want to see it. But again, we saw the, dare I say, rather brittle now, Diego Carlos go down again with another injury and have to be replaced towards the end of the game. Now, this is a concern. This was someone who was signed for a great deal of money, I think 20 million plus, which at 29, 30 is a lot of money for a centre-back for Aston Villa. He's on huge wages, and this is someone who is obviously had a bad injury. That can happen to anyone, and he was out for the best part of last season. But now he seems to be picking up injuries every few weeks. He was out, picked up an injury against Liverpool and was out for a few weeks. He's picked up an injury now and he's gone off. And he's kind of, it's a concern is what I'll say. It's a concern because with Tyrone Mings out and with Clement Longley, there's rumours swirling that he will be recalled to Barcelona in January because we're not playing him enough. We kind of need a fit Diego Carlos, not only for the European campaign, but because, you know, it's not fair or reasonable for us to expect Pau Torres and Ezri Konsa to be available and at it each and every week. So a bit of a concern. Get well soon, Diego, and hopefully he can have a good period now when he does return from this injury. Unai Emery did say it was a lighter injury. Hopefully Diego Carlos can have a good period now where he can get fit and stay fit, because we're definitely going to need him in this coming festive fixture pileup, which obviously is going to require the full breadth of the Aston Villa squad to cope with. Also beautiful to see my favorite wizard and your favorite wizard, the magic man Bertrand Traoré, return and to the Aston Villa field. Wasn't really given too much time to do anything. I would have been interested to see what would have happened if Bertrand Traoré was given a run against Forest actually at the weekend, because I felt like in that game we just needed someone who was very good 1v1. We needed someone who could dribble. just someone who could create that space and pull Forrest out of that block or win a foul. But anyway, he wasn't used. He was used very briefly here. And then the full time whistle blows. Aston Villa win. We did not get to see Alex Moreno have any minutes. We did not get to see John Duran have any minutes. That was a bit disappointing. Would have been nice. I think Unai Emery also said at the end of the game, it would have been nice for Alex Moreno to have the opportunity to have a bit of a run out. But he said that he wanted to do that in a less pressurized situation when the game was already won, I guess is was the inference there. Very interesting as well that we saw, probably not that interesting, but interesting to me. I mentioned Callum Chambers earlier. Are we going to see him again? To me, we're in injury time. Diego Carlos goes down. We need a right-sided center half. It would seem to me that Callum Chambers would have been the I don't know. It just seems like you'd put Callum Chambers in there next to Longley for the last few minutes to see the game out. Unai Emery did not do that. He went with Pau Torres, and that, I imagine, signifies that after a calamitous performance or two in the cups so far for Callum Chambers, that could be his goose cooked. We saw, if you go back to that Stevenage defeat last year, lots of the people who were involved in that Stevenage defeat, Danny Ings, Morgan Sanson, Philippe Coutinho, they were, and I think there's somebody else as well, they were shown the door. Bye-bye, farewell. And it will be interesting to see if Callum Chambers' less than heroic performances this season, and again, not necessarily Callum Chambers' fault, very difficult to get any kind of rhythm or confidence when you're being used so sparingly. But either way, I'm wondering if with Callum Chambers, an England international, certainly on high wages, if there isn't opportunity for resources to be moved elsewhere. Like, could we use some of those big wages that Callum Chambers will be making and perhaps have a younger prospect in that place as kind of centre half slash right back who's never going to be seen? Could that be one of our youth players or a cheaper alternative? And would we be able to, you know, extract a fee for Callum Chambers with his experience and send him to somewhere like a Bournemouth or a Burnley who are struggling to survive and pick up £5 or £6 million in January? Who knows? Just speculating. And we will certainly have lots more speculation as to the January transfer window and all that kind of thing coming up on all of our beautiful, beautiful, beautiful channels. So that is it. Aston Villa, they win 2-1 against AZ Alkmaar. We are now in a commanding position at the top of Group E. I believe we only need a point, one more point from our remaining two fixtures to guarantee qualification. But obviously the key issue here is that we want to make sure that we finish top of the group, because if you don't finish top of the group, you have potentially to do a playoff. So, no, not potentially, you do have to do a playoff. So that's two extra games, I think, home and away, that you really don't need piled into our already very, very busy and kind of congested fixture list with our ongoing injuries. Again, without trying to beat the dead horse here, we still have no Mings. We still have no Buendia. Moreno has still not played a minute of football, even though he's back on the bench. We had Ramsey for a cup of coffee, and then he's disappeared again. So again, not to overstate this, but four of our key players are still not available. Diego Carlos has just gone down. So we need to be very, very cautious and very, very careful to avoid finishing second and to make sure that we are winning the we're winning the group. So Villa are, as I said, top, or joint top, should I say, with Legia Warsaw, who gave us that humiliating 3-2 defeat earlier this season. Legia do come to Villa Park in 3 weeks, so we have the opportunity to avenge that loss. And then a win against Legia and a point against Monster Zrinjski would guarantee us the top spot. And that would be what is required to make sure we don't have to do that playoff and we can qualify for the knockout stages as group leaders. All right, that is it for the Europa Conference League. Briefly, let's touch upon Aston Villa. We are aiming on Sunday for our 16th, I believe, home victory in a row against Fulham. Fulham put up a mighty performance against the interestingly formed Manchester United at the weekend, only losing to a late Bruno Fernandes winner. Again, if you want a full Fulham preview, go hear Andy and Daniel on the main show, the Gather Around the Lamp podcast, available on all of your beautiful podcast platforms. I am predicting a home win here, for what it's worth. I think that Fulham will be tough. I think that they're gonna work hard, and they're gonna try and obviously spoil. I think the Wolves kind of tactic and the Forest tactic of being physical and trying to spoil and the low block is probably what we're going to see more and more of. But at home, Aston Villa are a different beast, and I'm thinking Aston Villa 3, Fulham 1, for a victory to hopefully push us forward in the Premier League. That is all we have time for today on Gather Round Again, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you in association with underagaslitlamp.com. Thank you so much for listening. Please like and share. This is the only way that this video goes out there. Again, I'll remind you, our marketing budget is this. Zero. Zip. So the only way that we know is, the only way people hear about this show is through social media and word of mouth. So spread the word. If you like what you hear, feel free to leave a comment in the chat. We try and read all the comments and reply to them as well. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you for tuning in to Gather Round Again, an Aston Villa podcast. Please like down below and... subscribe. Up the Villa.
Dalian Atkinson on one of those great runs. What a run by Dalian Atkinson! Atkinson again!
And it's quite low!